You know that feeling when you rent one of those brand new, ultra-modern smart homes? Oh yeah, one of those places where everything is voice-controlled? Exactly. Everything is perfectly furnished, the lights respond to your voice, and the thermostat just knows what you want. It feels like magic. Until something breaks. Right, until there's a malfunction. The heating keeps blasting, you panic and open some panel in the wall to find an incomprehensible tangle of wires and circuit boards. You have no clue how any of it works. None. You're not the owner of the system. You're just a user who pays rent each month. And worse, if you use the lights more or connect extra devices, your bill at the end of the month becomes unpredictably high. In this scenario, you've bought pure comfort at the expense of control. And that's actually a perfect metaphor for the state of modern software development right now. Developers are increasingly relying on highly abstract services that they don't fully understand anymore. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today with you.
We're diving into a stack of documentation, architecture notes, and a very noticeable manifesto for a technology that just refuses to rent that smart home. Yeah, they prefer to build it themselves. Exactly. Instead of renting, it gives you the bricks, cement, and blueprints to build an unbreakable house yourself. That platform is called Flow. So, okay, let's unpack this. What do we have in front of us today? We have a technical manual, the line notes explaining the rather contrary philosophy behind it, and even something called a skill.md file. Yes, that last one is really special. Apparently, it's exclusively written for AI agents. It's a fascinating combination of resources today. Because, you know, usually when you read those dry API documentations, here you can almost feel the rebellion, an uprising against the established order of the tech industry. Definitely. For you as a listener, we are living in an era of serverless architectures, those massive JavaScript frameworks and endless dependency trees. And Flow shuts the door on all of that. They just say no.
So whether you're coding yourself, leading a tech team, or just insanely curious about how the apps of the future are built, this exploration is going to fundamentally change your view of modern software, without a doubt. Let's dive right into that rebellion. The creator of Flow has a strong stance against something they call usage-metered hosting in the documentation. Why is that such a huge thorn in their side? Well, because it actually builds a fundamentally wrong incentive in the entire ecosystem. With usage-metered hosting, think of all those big cloud services where you pay by the second, gigabyte, or even per individual database query. Oh yeah, that adds up. You're essentially taxing your own success. Imagine having a wildly popular restaurant and your landlord literally raises your rent every time a new customer walks through the door. That's just unworkable. But that's exactly what the cloud does, you see. You build an app, it suddenly goes viral, you get thousands of visitors, and the next morning you wake up with a bill that wipes out your entire profit margin for the month. You're financially penalized for your own growth.
Where the dream of every developer is actually to scale up as much as possible. How does Flow address this cost issue? The documentation is quite clear on this. Flow isn't an add-on library to a pre-existing cloud stack. It is the stack. Wait, everything in one? Everything in one. The language, the app platform, the server, everything. And they solve those absurd costs by reverting to traditional servers. Just a virtual private server, a VPS. They use something called FrankenPHP. It's a super modern application server specifically built for PHP that handles server resources incredibly efficiently. So whether you have 100 or 100,000 visitors, as long as your server can handle it, your monthly bill for that VPS remains just 10 euros. No nasty surprises. Exactly. Zero surprises. But wait a minute. You just said PHP. Aren't we literally 20 years behind the times? Because the whole trend is all about JavaScript, Python, TypeScript everywhere now, right? That's indeed the perception many have. But if you look at the reality of the internet, more than 70...
And there's a solid reason for that. PHP uses what's called a stateless architecture. Okay, for listeners who are bewildered right now, explain that stateless concept in simple terms. Sure. Imagine calling a customer service line for your internet provider. In a stateful system, the counterpart, the employee, memorizes your entire life story during their shift. That sounds handy. But if that employee suddenly goes homesick, you lose all your information and have to start from scratch.
Exactly.
In a stateless system like PHP, you start each call anew by giving your customer number, the employee retrieves your file, solves your problem, hangs up, and immediately forgets you altogether.
Ah, so each click on a website is like starting a new call.
Exactly. The coat starts up, builds the web page, sends it to the visitor, and then immediately dies off. All the server's memory is released efficiently again. This makes it particularly robust and scalable, as there are virtually no memory leaks or overloads. So Flow takes that unbreakable foundation, but adds a modern touch to the developer experience without making the underlying infrastructure unnecessarily complex.
And a big part of that experience is their zero dependencies rule, meaning no package managers, no NPM, no external third-party code in your project.
That's right.
But doesn't that go against everything taught in programming courses nowadays? We're taught not to reinvent the wheel constantly, aren't we?
Yes, but the creator of Flow argues that by doing so, we've lulled ourselves into a false sense of productivity. Like, yes, you quickly import a nice feature, but you simultaneously import 10,000 lines of code that you've never read in your life.
The notorious dependency tree.
Exactly. A package depends on other packages, which depend on other packages. Before you know it, what started as a simple blog is now 200 megabytes of someone else's code.
Yeah, it's madness when you think about it. And if there's a security gap in it, or if the original creator on the other side of the world pulls the plug, your entire application collapses. The philosophy of Flow is, if the code base isn't small enough for one person to fully understand, you essentially do not own your software anymore. You're just the caretaker of a building you didn't design yourself.
Nicely put.
Yes.
Okay, so they really want to keep control. And for that, they've invented their own syntax, a sort of language extension with .flow. You type in this language and the framework transpiles, translates it, to pure, readable PHP, CSS, and JavaScript. But when I looked at the rules of that syntax and their resources, it's strict, right? It's Spartan, almost unforgiving. Yes, Flow's parser operates fundamentally differently from almost all current popular languages. It is entirely designed to eliminate visual and cognitive noise. Let's address the elephant in the room. They've killed the semicolon. They're gone, yes. Every programmer in the world knows you end a statement with a semicolon. It's ingrained in our motor memory. And Flow just refuses this. A statement ends simply at the enter, at the new line. Correct. The system adds the semicolons itself in the final code, unless you explicitly indicate with a bracket or comma that your sentence continues on the next line. That's something to get used to, for sure. And you'll see the same rigid style with the CSS rules. One declaration per line. No multi-line values unless you use a very specific block syntax. It really enforces uniformity.
Definitely. Anyone writing Flow ends up producing virtually identical looking code. But here I have to pause you because I read something about the views, the HTML blocks, what the visitor ultimately sees on screen. It literally states in the manual, an HTML view block ends at the first empty line. No exceptions. Yes, that's a strict rule. But doesn't that sound like a design flaw? I mean, if you or I are coding and just need some visual breathing room in our text editor, we hit enter by accident and bam, your whole view is closed. The app thinks the rest is suddenly server code and everything crashes. That sounds incredibly fragile. I totally understand why you'd think that, but the designers saw this as a deliberate decision. Look, to understand that, we need to consider what Flow does not do. They outright refuse to build an AST. An AST, right, an abstract syntax tree, correct? Yes. And why do we normally build such a tree? Almost every modern language, from JavaScript to Python, uses an AST. The parser reads your text, chops it into thousands of mathematical blocks, and constructs a massive, complicated branching tree structure in memory.
Only after this entire tree is analyzed, it generates the executable code. That sounds quite heavy. It is. It's cumbersome and swallows all your needless white space, but it's slow. And even worse, the final code that's spewed out looks nothing like what you originally typed. So when something goes wrong in production, you spend hours digging, wondering where did this error possibly originate? Exactly. By Flow ditching that entire tree structure and using a simple line-based parser instead, they just read your files straightforwardly from top to bottom, line by line. And the parser itself is therefore tiny. Yeah, you can practically read the parser's code in an afternoon. But the holy grail here is source mapping. Because line 42 in your Flow code is almost always line 42 in the generated PHP. Debugging is child's play. If your live app stalls, the error message points you perfectly, one-to-one, to the line you wrote.
That's a pretty brilliant trade-off, actually. They enforce strict discipline, but in return, they take your blindfold off when your server catches fire. Yeah, you forfeit a bit of messy freedom for perfect diagnostics.
And now, speaking of that ultra-tight, predictable structure, here's where it gets really interesting, even for you as a listener. That strict readability without complex trees turns out to be a huge advantage for a totally new audience, AI agents. Yeah, this is for me the most forward-thinking element from all the resources. They literally call the platform Agent First by Design. What does that mean? It means considering AI as an equal partner from day one, from the very first line of code. Exactly. So they have this skill.md file that's so peculiar. I really haven't seen that elsewhere. It's not a human-readable manual, but just a markdown document purely intended for an AI to ingest so that ChatGPT or Claude comprehends the architecture before even one line of code is typed. And the interaction goes much deeper than just reading a text. The ecosystem has three specific layers through the command line by which an AI can autonomously navigate the app. Let's start with the reflect layer. Okay, what does reflect do?
Normally, a code base for an AI is just an indecipherable mess of thousands of loose files. But with the reflect command, the AI can safely request the entire structure and receive it back in a neat JSON format. So it's kind of like an X-ray of the app with all the routes and database models without the AI physically needing to open all those files. Nice analogy, yes. Then there's the build layer. Here, the AI can compile the code and get immediate feedback from the linter. A linter checks for style errors. So the AI types code, checks the build, sees its own mistake, and can immediately correct itself. Okay, but we're deliberately skipping the middle layer now, the flow.evil. Yes, that you wanted to address. Yeah, because I read in the documentation that an AI can use this to live evaluate and execute pieces of code against the current data of the app. Wait a minute, that sounds like the ultimate security nightmare. You're giving an autonomous system that sometimes hallucinates the keys to run code on your server. That agent could suddenly decide, you know what, I'll just delete the entire customer database. Yes, putting it that way, it indeed sounds like a massive risk.
But Flow has fundamentally safeguarded this. This evil command, firstly, is not an open route on the internet. You can only invoke it via the local terminal. But more importantly, there's a hard security gate in place. It simply refuses to work unless your app is in build mode set to true. Ah, so only in local development mode? Exactly. Once you compile your app for production, for the outside world, this whole functionality of this command is physically not even included in the code. It cannot exist on a production server. But locally, it's a sort of surgical tool for an AI, literally to test, okay, if I do this, what does the database say? That's cool. And they make that collaboration between human and machine very tangible. It comes with a standard app.md scratchpad. Yeah, super handy. So you type there, hey, I've updated the database model, we still need to validate the forms. And the AI reads and picks it up. It's like pair programming, but asynchronously with a computer. You can see here a real shift. AI is no longer just a cool trick for auto-completing, it becomes a permanent colleague. And that mindset extends to the apps you build with it.
Flow has a built-in AI resource that connects by default with OpenAI, Gemini, and Claude, all through one standardized interface. Yeah, I read you can use commands like chunk and apply to literally live stream AI responses to the user screen. Really amazing. But this all leaves me with a huge question. Shoot, we said at the start, zero dependencies, no external packages. This means if you want to create an app with a database, with translations, with visitor statistics, and reactive forms, your framework has to solve all these things entirely on its own. Yeah, that's the consequence. But how do you keep that manageable? How do you ensure that such a platform doesn't become one big bloated monster? That's indeed the ultimate test. And Flow solves this by building everything, absolutely everything, on one very powerful foundation, the magical object-based class. Okay. Virtually everything in Flow is an extension of that one central object. It clears away all that repetitive boilerplate code we typically write all day. Look, in traditional programming, you often write complex functions for lazy loading, to conserve memory.
So heavy calculations are only executed when the user actually needs them. Yeah, in Flow, you simply write prop, now, arrow, time. And that's it.
Wow. Flow automatically turns it into an efficient method that lazy loads and also caches the result for the rest of the request. The cognitive load for you as the builder drops tremendously. And from that base class, they build forward. I read about their database models. You define a super simple schema for SQLite or MySQL, and the system automatically generates a whole content management system for you, a complete CMS out of the box, without writing a single line of HTML. It's endless. They have a built-in analytics system, the visitor's resource, and what I like about it is it doesn't just measure the number of page views. It privacy-friendly measures how long a visitor actively has a tab open in front of them. Much more valuable, of course. And here in Europe, with strict GDPR, you get a standard encrypted cookie wall, no delays from third-party scripts. The visitor clicks on Essential, and the analytics system immediately adjusts its behavior under the hood. This is exactly the power of Flow's vertical integration.
Because they manage the language, back-end and front-end, they can build features that are impossible in a fragmented tech stack. And their translation system is the prime example of that. It's really pure magic. Listener, imagine you design a button in your app and you simply type in HTML, curly brace open, NL colon hello world. You simply tell the app that this text is in Dutch. If someone from Spain views the site in Spanish, Flow catches that request, checks the cache, oh, we don't have a Spanish version yet, then fires off an asynchronous task to the built-in AI translator, translates hello world to Spanish, saves it permanently, and displays the page. And you never have to dig manually into those endless JSON translation files. Yeah, it takes away so much friction. And that concept of asynchronously handling things in the background brings us to the front end. Look, users today expect app-like experiences, that you don't always see a white screen when clicking a button. The famous single-page applications, SPAs. Yes, and normally you build that with heavy JavaScript frameworks like React. Flow handles it very differently with their Apply protocol.
Correct. I found this amazing too. You mark a standard form with class is async. When the visitor then saves it, the data quietly goes to the server. But the server doesn't respond with a complete new HTML document. It sends very targeted small commands back, like replace the text in this one field and color that button green. And that feels lightning fast. But you've literally written 0% JavaScript. So if we zoom out on that zero dependencies concept, instead of lugging around a huge toolbox where you've bought each hammer from some vague brand and nothing fits snugly together, Flow gives you a kind of perfectly tuned Swiss Army knife. Yeah, everything comes from the same factory and clicks seamlessly together. It removes a lot of architectural fatigue. But here's the big but I've been alluding to for a while. Go ahead. We talked extensively at the start about PHP, stateless. A request comes in, does its work, and dies off. Correct. Fantastic for blogs and simple dashboards. But what if my app needs real-time, long-term connections? I want to build a live chat, or need a stock ticker system with hundreds of updates per second, or complex tasks in the background.
Traditionally, that's just a nightmare in PHP. Yes, that's the Achilles heel. How does that perfect Swiss Army knife solve it? Flow introduces, purely optionally, the Flow Daemon. This is a standalone Node.js process that runs like a sidecar permanently alongside your PHP application. Oh, stop the presses. Wait a minute here. We've been singing praises for half an hour about zero dependencies. Everything is pure PHP, and now we're suddenly sneaking a heavy Node server in through the back door? Isn't that just straight up hypocritical? I totally get it, really. But the nuance is super important here. It's in the strict optionality. The whole application, with all those AI translations and reactive forms we just talked about, works 100% perfectly without this daemon. Oh, okay. It's truly only an additive layer for extreme performance or WebSockets. So wait, if I build a chat feature with WebSockets and that daemon suddenly crashes, my entire website doesn't go offline? Exactly. Your core application continues to operate unperturbed via normal HTTP requests.
If you call the function Westcast to send a live message and the daemon is down, that one specific chat command quietly fails in the background. But your main page still loads. It degrades gracefully, they call it. Exactly. You're not suddenly completely dependent on Node.js to stay online at all. That softens the blow quite a bit. But what does it add if I decide to turn it on? Two gigantic things. One, it manages those permanent WebSocket connections for you. Two, it introduces a resident worker pool in production. And that means that instead of PHP having to restart and load the framework for each web request from scratch, the daemon keeps the app in memory warm and reuses it for thousands of incoming requests. This provides a huge speed boost for apps with a lot of traffic. And funnily enough, in development mode, the daemon deliberately does the opposite. Oh, why is that? Then it starts a fresh process for each event so that you immediately see the effect when you modify your code without restarting the server. That's quite cleverly thought out again. And I also read that this daemon is a solution for scheduled tasks. Yes, the so-called cron jobs.
Normally, they are hidden in messy server settings somewhere on Linux. But here, the daemon simply taps your app every minute with the command tasks run. The app then checks in its own code, for instance, if a daily report still needs to be sent out. So your scheduling lives along in your version control. Yeah, and best of all, the way you write your code, whether it's a background task or an incoming WebSocket message via WS Massive, remains exactly the same with or without the daemon. You don't have to change your behavior as a developer. Okay, let's evaluate the insights from this deep dive. We started with the pain of the current internet, exploding and unpredictable cloud bills, the sluggishness of gigantic dependency trees, and extreme abstraction through which we've lost control. Flow is far more than just a nifty new tool. It's definitely a technological and philosophical statement. They demand ownership back. They strip away those abstract syntax trees for raw speed and error detection. They enforce a strict regime with their own language, but offer a built-in comfort in return. Yes, with a CMS, with analytics, with out-of-the-box translations.
Things for which you'd usually have to knit together countless fragile packages or paid subscriptions. So why does this matter to you, the listener? The gravity of our whole industry pulls almost irresistibly towards more complexity, and Flow proves very clearly that it can be otherwise, that you can build super fast, modern, real-time apps with deep AI integration without giving away control over your monthly costs. You don't need to rent that incomprehensible smart home anymore. The tools are ready for you to become your own architect again. Absolutely. And that actually brings me to one last thought. A thought emerging from what we read about that agent-first design, and frankly, it's quite disruptive. Oh, I'm intrigued. Go ahead. Well, we've seen that Flow is really the first framework fundamentally designed to be read by machines, right? With that perfectly structured skill.md and JSON introspection. If the architecture of the tools we use is already specifically adjusting to facilitate AI, are we going to need human developers in the next 5 or 10 years to learn all those specific syntax rules by heart? Oof, wow.
That's really the ultimate consequence of this kind of design. Yes, do today's programmers, who are still sweating over perfect indentation, eventually become directors? That we merely set the vision and prompt to the agent, and the AI then plays the Flow framework like an instrument to create the app? The framework is now literally preparing the ground for that. That is something absolutely fascinating to reflect on after this episode. And with that, dear listener, we've reached the end of today's exploration. Thank you so much for diving with us into this rebellious yet secretly brilliant glimpse of the future. Examine your own coding habits over the coming weeks. Are you still renting that unpredictable smart home? Or have you become again the architect of your own foundation? Keep exploring. Always stay critical and stay curious. Until next time.